When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. Last week in Hong Kong, the free press died. The newspaper Apple Daily published its final edition after the Chinese government froze its assets and the cops once again raided its offices, this time arresting its editor and its executives and an outspoken opinion writer. All face criminal charges. Its publisher, Jimmy Lai, faces a life sentence. His daily tabloid was brash and trashy and glorious. It scandalized local officials in Hong Kong and stuck it to Beijing every day. That's done. Beijing's reach does not just extend into Hong Kong media. It is active here in Canada. This past May, a parliamentary committee on Canada-China relations tabled a report from a group called Alliance Canada-Hong Kong. It documented a sophisticated influence operation by the People's Republic of China that is currently active in Canada. They are working to distort our media, influence our politicians, and to scrape intellectual property from our universities, according to this study. So, you know, you read that, and then you read the news last week about how the president of the Public Health Agency of Canada, Ian Stewart, refused to give information to Parliament about why two federal scientists were fired from a top security infectious disease laboratory in Winnipeg. Andrew Coyne wrote about that in the Globe and Mail. He wrote that there is no doubt that when Stewart defied Parliament's demands for information, he was acting with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's approval. And then I read in the National Post that one of those fired scientists, who we're not allowed to know anything about, Chiang Guo-Qi, well, intellectual property records that the Post found that have been registered in Beijing reveal that this scientist has previously collaborated with the Chinese government on unspecified inventions that are related to her Canadian virology job. She and her husband, Kidding Cheng, who is the other fired scientist who we're not allowed to know anything about, they went on repeated work trips to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which happens to be a level 4 disease lab, just like the one they worked at in Winnipeg. So look, I put all of that information together, and what I've been able to figure out is, just kidding, there is no figuring this out. I am not going to figure this out, not based on the shreds of information that we have at this point. Look, what we know is that the most powerful elected leader in our country is keeping secrets from the public, probably because of his delicate relationship with arguably the most powerful country in the world, which itself is running a reported secret influence campaign that is active within our politics, our universities, and our media. So the only conspiracy theory that I'm able to confirm is that powerful people are conspiring. It's easy to get loopy with this stuff, hunting for secret Chinese state influence within the Canadian media. That endeavor can sound paranoid at best and, you know, racist at worst. And yet, there is secret Chinese state influence within the Canadian media. We report on it when we can in bits and pieces. One little shred that we talked about 5 years ago concerned a Vancouver Chinese language newspaper called Global Chinese Press. And what we reported on at the time is that they had fired their popular columnist after he criticized the leadership of the People's Republic of China. And I'll be honest, I had mixed feelings about that story. I mean, just because columnist Gao Bingchen was fired after he went after the Chinese government, that doesn't mean that he was fired because he went against the Chinese government. And it certainly doesn't mean that he was fired by the Chinese government. I mean, it's not like this Vancouver newspaper is secretly owned by the Chinese government. Except that it turns out that that Vancouver newspaper was secretly owned by the Chinese government. Got a wild story for you today. Ian Young of the South China Morning Post found the evidence buried within civil court filings in British Columbia. Turns out that in 2002, a significant Chinese language newspaper in Canada was literally sold to CITIC, C-I-T-I-C, which is the corporate arm of the PRC, the People's Republic of China. Maybe you've never heard of CITIC, but you've probably heard of Microsoft, Apple, Walmart. Well, CITIC is bigger than all three of them combined.
The global vision for CITIC Heavy Industries Company Limited is to become a world-famous modernized enterprise. It places development at the forefront and in so doing leads the market with this competitive edge.
CITIC Pacific key business interests include special steel production, mining, and property developments.
CITIC is a large and powerful trade and investment group for more than three decades.
Expanding your shareholding in the McDonald's franchise.
2.5 years ago, we had 2,500 stores. We have 3,300 now.
And when CITIC expanded into media, the official state press around that was all about plans for blockbuster movies and big-budget TV shows. Nobody knew, or perhaps cared, that it also included buying a Canadian newspaper for some reason. I mean, I care about that. It's sort of the thing that I'm paid to care about. But if my assumption was, okay, here it is, smoking gun evidence of the Chinese government's covert plan to control Canadian media, well, as Ian Young has reported, it's actually a bit more complicated than that. To understand just what the hell happened here, we need to tell you the story of Li Bolun, a Chinese media mogul who's been compared to Rupert Murdoch, who fell from grace, who was convicted of fraud, and who died in a prison cell after being arrested in a Beijing meth house. Ian Young joins me with the whole story in a minute. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Sarah Bartlett, Jeff Dolegsi, Robin Schwartz, Eric Geringas, Evelina Chojica, Wes McGraw, Jeff Bedgood, and Devanshu.
My name is Devanshu. I live in Toronto and work with data. I support Canada Land because Jesse said, if you like our show, help us make it. Not only does Canada Land inform me about the stories they cover directly, but the conversations on Canada Land and Thunder Bay also teach me to critically approach news that I consume from other sources.
Ian, tell me a story. Let's start at the very beginning. Who was Li Bolun?
Li Bolun was an amazing character, but you won't read about him much. And if you Google him, you won't find much about him either. Now, Li Bolun was the president of the entertainment arm of CITIC. And what CITIC is China's premier investment company. And by China, I mean the Chinese government. Now, this is a corporate behemoth. It has more than $1 trillion in assets. CITIC is a huge deal. And as the head of the entertainment arm of CITIC, Lee Bolun was also a huge deal. He first shot onto the mainland Chinese spotlight back in 1996. Then he was a sporting and entertainment impresario. And what he did was he brought the soccer star Maradona and the Argentine super team Boca Juniors to China. At the time, this was the biggest sporting event in Chinese history, and that made a huge impact. And from there on, he was brought onto the board of CITIC. But yeah, I've found out some amazing things about Mr. Lee, who met a very untimely demise in 2016, and that's all brought about and seen in court documents here in Vancouver that relate to a battle over a Canadian newspaper.
All right. Well, we're going to go through this, and I know that you have sorted through just a tremendous amount of evidence and court affidavits, and it's quite a tangled web to untangle. To just lay the foundation here, you said trillion with a T. I mean, as you write, CITIC Group is worth more than Walmart, Apple, and Microsoft combined.
It's a giant company.
And when you say that Lee Bolun was the entertainment mogul running their entertainment and media arm, that's understating it, because in your piece, you write that he essentially pitched the idea of them even having a media and entertainment arm. This was sort of his endeavor.
That's right. This is way back in 2000. He got in suite with Wang Jun, and Wang Jun was one of the most powerful figures in China at the time. He was the chairman of CITIC, and he was the chairman of Polygroup, which is the People's Liberation Army-linked corporate entity. And CITIC Culture, which is this entertainment group, was born in 2001 because of that. He was a protege of Wang Jun. He was made a director of CITIC, and basically he was being touted as the most powerful man in Chinese entertainment. He was likened in Chinese state media to Sumner Redstone, to Rupert Murdoch. He was an immensely powerful figure.
Why would the Chinese equivalent of Rupert Murdoch or Sumner Redstone have anything to do with a Canadian Chinese newspaper in Vancouver?
Yeah, well, this is where it gets interesting. What I found out was there's this newspaper called Global Chinese Press. Global Chinese Press is quite a prominent publication in Chinese circles here. It's distributed for free, but it's seen in Chinese malls across the country. And to that extent, it's very well read and it's quite an influential newspaper. And what happened was that very, very quietly, CITIC and Lee Bolun bought control of Global Chinese Press. Now, that's an amazingly controversial thing, that the Communist Party's corporate entity bought a prominent newspaper here in Canada. And this has never before been reported. What happened next, though, was quite dramatic, is that subsequently these shares, which were actually, you know, printed in the name of CITIC, ended up in the hands of Lee Bolun himself. Lee Bolun was subsequently arrested and convicted of fraud in China, an apparently unrelated matter. He engaged in lengthy legal action in Canada to secure these shares. He immigrated on the back of this purchase of shares, but then he was arrested again in China in a meth house, apparently. And he died in prison a year later, supposedly of some drug-related ailment. So it's really quite an amazing story.
You know, I always love talking to you, Ian, because, you know, it's rare in my beat of Canadian media to get to talk about Beijing meth houses in a story about Canadian media. You know, Global Chinese Press is something that I was looking through our own archives, and we talked about them in a 2016 episode of Canada Land when we were looking into this idea of Beijing influence, of Chinese government influence on the Canadian press, on the Canadian Chinese press. And this is the sort of minor story about how a columnist, Gao Bingchen, was fired from his job at Global Chinese Press after expressing views that were critical of Beijing. And we were asking this question of, you know, is this paper somehow influenced by the Communist Party of China? And there were other incidents where editors or journalists there were reprimanded for straying from the party line. And then you report and actually produce photo evidence of this stunning document. Here is CITIC, which is essentially a corporate arm of the Chinese government, buying a controlling interest in a popular Canadian Chinese newspaper, and my mind goes directly towards this is smoking gun evidence that the Chinese government is very directly trying to propagandize in Canada. But when I read all the details of your story, I actually began to doubt that premise.
There are strong reasons to look a lot more closely at this purchase, because Li Bolund lawyers and his widow, who has gone on to inherit these shares, have maintained all along that Li Bolund and now his widow are the legitimate owner of these shares. And it needs to be said very clearly that Canadian courts so far have repeatedly concluded that that is the case and that Li Bolund owned these shares and that his widow then went on to own these shares. But at the same time, the widow's lawyers have acknowledged that Li Bolund was acting on behalf of CITIC when he originally entered this deal to purchase these shares. And CITIC itself doesn't appear to want anything to do with this legal action. It is not laying claim to these to these shares. It does not now want anything to do with this newspaper. And the lawsuits that have emerged are actually between Li Bolund's widow, who now controls Global Chinese Press, and the previous owners, the founder, who said she thought she was going into business with CITIC, and it turns out appears to have gone into business with Li Bolund, unbeknownst to her, she says.
So let's talk about what we know, and then maybe I'll talk a bit about what I think, and you'll tell me if I'm on the right track here or not. Thanks to your reporting, what we know is that CITIC buys this controlling interest in this Canadian Chinese newspaper for like $700,000. And Li Bolund, in his other work as the entertainment mogul for CITIC, is dealing with tens or hundreds of millions of dollars, major motion pictures, television shows. Nothing that I read leads me to believe that he was in the practice of buying news media, let alone foreign news media. But suddenly, he is overseeing a deal for CITIC Media to buy a controlling interest in this Canadian newspaper. But then somehow he ends up being personally, not CITIC Media, but he personally is the one who owns those shares. And his claim to Canadian residency is based on that entrepreneurial investment.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So that's what you report. And then as soon as he buys the thing, the pre-existing owner says that he loses all interest in it. So if he was there to propagandize and sway hearts and minds in Canada, he wasn't doing a very good job of it, because she was complaining that as soon as she sold it to him, and she didn't think she was selling it to him, she thought she was selling it to the Chinese government, essentially, he doesn't want to have anything to do with it. Now, that's what we know. What that leads me to think is that he was not buying the newspaper on behalf of CITIC Media or for Chinese government propaganda purposes. He was buying this newspaper because he wanted to live in Canada. And the fact that he was later convicted of some form of fraud against CITIC Media makes me wonder if he wasn't stealing money from his employer with a getaway plan of ultimately retiring in Canada. What do you think?
Well, I think they're sort of reasonable conclusions, but the thing is that none of this has been resolved yet. There's still litigation pending in which the previous owners are suing to strip Li Bolund's widow of her ownership of these shares, on the premise that these shares should be reinstated, in their words, to CITIC, and that CITIC is the true owner.
And CITIC is saying, no thanks, we don't want it.
Well, they haven't said anything. That's the thing. They haven't wanted to take part in this at all, and they simply did not return my calls. They're not interested in talking about it. And when we started poking around this story, a 4,000-word profile of Li Bolund disappeared from the People's Daily website. This is a profile that had been up for 16 years, and it was vanished within days of us starting to ask about Mr. Li Bolund.
So that's another interesting media angle. I mean, the People's Daily, this is the main state news organ of the Chinese government, and they ran a major feature of Li Bolund when his star was ascendant, and then they just disappeared him after you started asking questions.
I mean, he himself had been disappeared long before that, because it was in 2016, don't forget, that he died in a Chinese prison. But I do want to add also, though, that Li Bolund's deputy at CITIC Culture at the time has provided an affidavit in which he says that it was in fact CITIC that made this purchase, that Li Bolund was not entitled to take these shares on, and that it was he, the deputy, who actually proposed that the purchase be made on behalf of CITIC. And as I said, the widow's lawyers have in fact conceded that initially at least he was negotiating on behalf of CITIC. It's really quite complex about exactly where the truth lies, and it hasn't been fully ruled upon yet. But it is quite striking, this contrast between this prominent but relatively small outfit based here in Burnaby, you know, where he bought a half stake for $700,000 compared to the sheer scale of CITIC Group, which, as I said, currently has assets of $1,200 billion US dollars.
Did his deputy say why it was his idea to buy this Canadian newspaper?
He says that he simply thought it was a good investment for CITIC.
Does CITIC have any other newspapers?
It did at the time. It did have other magazines and things like that. It's difficult to pin down exactly what CITIC is, except that it is the Chinese government's investment vehicle. So it does just about everything. It's one of the most complicated and sprawling sovereign wealth creatures in the world. And it is quite opaque as well.
But what I'm trying to get at, I guess, is Li Bulun, as the steward of this media effort, is there reason to believe he was building an arsenal of propaganda organs? Or is this aberrant from the kind of business he was otherwise doing?
No, well, certainly it doesn't appear typical. I've found no evidence that he owns or tried to own other media organizations here in Canada. So it certainly does appear not typical, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. And I guess either way, whether this was entered into out of a legitimate business interest for CITIC or not, what you were able to demonstrate is that one way or the other, he was able to shift control from his employer into his own hands. And even the transfer of money had some dodgy dealings about how the money got into the hands of the previous owner.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for instance, some of the money was transferred not from CITIC's corporate accounts, but it came via a Hong Kong metalworking factory. So it's all quite opaque exactly how this money was moved around the world to complete this transaction.
Nothing is quite as it seems, and nothing is very simple, is it? Because, you know, even if we talk about this newspaper before the investment, it was a pro-Beijing newspaper. And in fact, there is a human rights complaint in British Columbia about the editorial practices of this newspaper.
That's right. That's under the helmswomanship of Li's widow, is that there were complaints that this newspaper had fallen under Communist Party influence. Now, what we've since demonstrated here is that it went quite substantially beyond influence and that, in fact, CITIC at one stage was listed as half-owner of this outfit. But yeah, there's always been these concerns, not just at Global Chinese Press, but in the Chinese media in general, about influence operations, about how the Chinese government tries to sway domestic Chinese diaspora opinion through various media outfits.
Well, that's true. And we're always looking at very hard to report stories about, was this person fired because they pissed off the party or they were seen to piss off the party? It's hard to actually quantify or report on whether there was like any level of Communist Party influence on Canadian editorial content. And then here's a paper owned by the Chinese government, and that's their name on the share certificate. And nobody knew? Nobody reported on this until your story came out? That can happen? A foreign government can own a Canadian newspaper and nobody knows about it?
Oh, exactly. It was very, very striking, you know, to see CITIC listed on that share certificate. And it just struck me that so many of these stories may never be reported because such a conflict that results in these kind of things being filed as documents in court cases may never occur. And it just struck me that how I stumbled on this was purely as a result of a beef between various individuals. It wasn't to do with this document necessarily having to be made public and being thrown up in the public eye through some sort of scandal. It's because of this private dispute between these people that goes to court. And that's how a lot of these Chinese disputes end up becoming known, is through legal action. And people may or may not be used to the transparency of Canadian courts, where you can just go down to the registry office and you can see all these documents laid out in front of you. And to that extent, I can understand why CITIC Group is not particularly interested in weighing in on this very small dollar terms case.
Well, there's like funny stuff in your story about how oblivious Canada is. You know, you write about this one scene in a courtroom where the judge is like, what's CIVIC? He's talking about a company that's bigger than Microsoft. And he mispronounces it. He thinks it's called CIVIC. And somebody has to say, no, it's actually CITIC.
Yeah, no, it's the case in Canada that these entities that are extremely prominent, extremely influential and well-known in Hong Kong or China or wherever can kind of fly under the radar here. And it's the same with personalities. To an extent, this is the business equivalent of a Canto pop star coming over here as a bolt hole, you know, to Vancouver, where you can maintain a certain level of anonymity And that's true not just of pop stars, that's true of business people, of tycoons, of billionaires, and of very prominent companies, even CITIC.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want. I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. So, what can you tell me about his widow, who I guess now owns this Canadian newspaper?
Yeah, well, Xi Xiaohong was a member of the People's Liberation Army Song and Dance Troupe. And what that is, it's like an all-singing, all-dancing arm of the PLA that Xi Jinping's wife, for instance, was a member of, you know, singing troupe. She was a TV star in her own right, an actress, and she married Li Bolun. But then she moved out here to Vancouver on the back of Mr. Li's immigration application as an entrepreneur, and now she's in charge of the newspaper. So, you know, she's had a very difficult time, I think is probably the best way to put it, given the tragic circumstances of her husband's death. And I haven't been able to speak to her. I approached her lawyers to try to talk to her, but she's understandably reluctant to do that. But at the same time, she's also had to contest various court actions that have been launched by the previous owners of the newspaper, who are still trying to strip her of ownership, and also, as you said, of those disgruntled employees who filed human rights complaints about what was going on at Global Chinese Press.
As newspaper owners go, is she the hands-on type?
Well, according to the human rights complaint, yes. It said that it was the actions that resulted in the firings were conducted at her behest. So that's a yes. And at the same time, she's also appeared at Chinese government functions just 6 or 7 months after her husband's death, meeting the consul general out here. And, her photograph actually appeared on the consulate's website here.
So while her husband, his life ended tragically and having fallen out of favor with the very highly ranked members of the government with whom he'd been previously a darling, her reputation and her connections seem to endure and be strong.
Yeah, no, there is no suggestion outside of these, you know, unfulfilled court cases that she's done anything wrong. She's not been charged with anything. She's not a criminal. She's not any of that stuff. She is still the subject of litigation that is, as I said, trying to strip her of ownership of Global Chinese Press. But to date, the Canadian courts have sided with her. They've repeatedly concluded that she's the legitimate owner of these shares and that she legitimately controls Global Chinese Press.
Hmm. So whether or not the purchase of this newspaper was merely a mechanism to get residency, the issue of there being a news org in Canada that is very, very closely linked to the Chinese government endures. It might not be owned by CITIC Media, which, as you write, was dissolved after Li Bulun's death. But his widow is a party loyalist, as her social media seems to indicate and everything else. And she's still writing this paper, and she's faced human rights complaints and other types of complaints about a very heavy-handed editorial influence on the paper's bent.
Yeah, I mean, those human rights issues were settled by the various lawyers that were involved. But yes, there are still concerns about the way that global Chinese press leans and the reasons that it leans the way it does. And, you know, there are plenty of people here in Canada who are quite open about being pro-Beijing or even, you know, pro the Chinese government in favour of the Chinese Communist Party. And, you know, Madam Xi has not been particularly shy about presenting herself as someone who hobnobs with the Consul General, for instance. And I don't think I see anything in global Chinese press to challenge the notion that this is a pro-Beijing newspaper. To what extent that is actually a mechanism of control, I do think that is in doubt. I mean, I think it's very, very hard to prove one way or the other, unless you're an actual insider, to say, well, this newspaper is controlled versus it is simply pro-China, pro-Beijing rather.
You know, Ian, like everything you cover, it's this incredibly dramatic and juicy stuff that always runs the risk of somebody saying to you, oh, you're just fanning the flames of anti-Chinese hatred and fear-mongering against the Chinese government. I follow you on Twitter and I see the kind of mentions you get pretty much every day. I could very easily see this story becoming highly politicized. I mean, very recently, a report by Alliance Canada Hong Kong came out. It was tabled in Parliament that claims that the government of China has set up a sophisticated network in Canada to harass people who are sympathetic to Uyghur, Tibetan, Taiwanese causes, or just anti-Beijing people in general. And that does include very well-financed efforts to distort information in the media and to influence politicians. And certainly I could see the fact that there is this newspaper that was at one point owned by the Chinese government being a political hot potato, or maybe better put, a political weapon in that argument. Ultimately, what do you think? Was this a case of an attempt to turn a Canadian newspaper into secretly into a propaganda rag? Or was this a case of a fraudster who was trying to jump ship and take whatever he had looted from CITIC with him to the mansion in Vancouver where his widow now lives?
It could be both. You know, I mean, I'm not saying either way, but it could be both. His former deputy at CITIC Culture says this was initially purchased at CITIC Culture's behest. Even Xi Xiaohong's lawyers have conceded that, yes, this purchase was originally under the auspices of CITIC Culture. But at the same time, CITIC Culture doesn't want anything to do with it now. Whatever value it may have once seen in this vehicle, it certainly doesn't see it now to the extent that it doesn't appear to want anything to do with this legal action. And I think the problem is that there's always going to be an element of opacity with these kinds of transactions and these kinds of deals that involve the Chinese government and Chinese government sympathizers and Chinese government vehicles. You're never going to get the smoking gun, I think, as you called it, this sort of perfect piece of proof that shows, well, here is the Chinese government trying to propagandize in Canada. I mean, as I said, that share certificate is quite a compelling thing to look at that has CITIC Culture's name on it. But as these legal cases show, it's complicated. These things are always complicated.
Was there anything in your reporting on him prior to his arrest at the meth house to indicate that that was a part of his life?
No. That's the thing that struck me, that it went from him being a convicted fraudster who was, you know, released from prison and then went on to conduct all these legal actions in Canada, to bang, all of a sudden he's being arrested in a meth house in Beijing. He's being charged with supposedly allowing a bunch of women on the property to take drugs, and then he is dead in very short order. You know, it was really striking to see this very dry battle over finances and control of a company and things like that come to such a dramatic climax.
The circumstances there are worth at least squinting your eyes at. He was not charged with selling drugs or taking drugs. He was charged with a strange charge of allowing others to take drugs.
Yeah.
There's no previous indication of him being involved in drugs. I mean, as soon as you hear about a drug arrest and then you hear death, you figure that that's just a related thing. But in this case, there's really no history that you could find of him being involved with drugs until this arrest for allowing others to take drugs. And then he's imprisoned, and then he's dead in jail.
Yeah, and this caught the litigants by surprise. I mean, the woman from whom he bought these shares, this half of the newspaper, was corresponding back and forth with him, and all of a sudden, you know, radio silence. And what happened was that he'd been arrested and dragged off by the police. Now, it just struck me that he was this case that seems quite low stakes for the Chinese government, for CITIC. You know, it's a relatively small amount of money. But at the end of the day, there was this very, very prominent figure who wound up dead in a Chinese prison and has basically been erased from the record. It's very hard to find anything about Lee Bolun. And this is a guy who, as I said, was previously touted as the Rupert Murdoch and Sumner Redstone of China.
Yeah, that's fascinating too. I mean, we don't know any of this through any kind of documentation from China around the first thing that he was thrown in jail for, whatever type of fraud he was involved in. That's all just very hazy territory. It's the fact that he got into litigation over the sale of half of a $1.4 million Canadian newspaper that all of this came to light.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I said, it's very, in dollar terms, it's very, very low stakes. And it never ceases to amaze me, actually, the incredible figures and the incredible backstories to some of these litigations that happen in Vancouver courts.
So this story, when you reported it in October, it came out on a Sunday. It did not seem to make many waves in Canadian media circles or in Canadian politics. Was there any fallout in China? I mean, this guy was a pretty big deal for a long time.
Well, no, I think that's also striking is that what fallout there was that People's Daily, which is this huge government organ, deleted its previous references to Lee Bolun when we started poking around. So it's clearly a matter of some sensitivity. But CITIC is such a behemoth in China. It's such a ginormous thing that a case like this in China is so small. It might be a big deal here in Canada in terms of this big debate about Chinese influence and media influence. But in China, I don't think it would make waves.
Hmm. It seems like his plan worked to some extent. He did get his permanent residency. He moved his wife and child here. Even after he had done time for fraud, he had perhaps a safe exit plan in Canada. Ian, was his big mistake setting foot in Beijing after all that happened?
Well, I mean, I can say these things for a fact. His ownership of these shares facilitated his immigration to Canada. That's certain. He activated permanent residency. He did, in fact, immigrate to Canada in 2008. But at some stage thereafter, he went back to China. And very soon thereafter that, that's where it all sort of all fell apart. And he was arrested, I think, in 2009. He was convicted in 2010. And then he was rearrested and reconvicted a few years later on the drug charges. I'm not sure if Lee Bolun ever came back to Canada, in fact, after that first visit. The time that he then spent in China was certainly under intense scrutiny. He lost all face. He lost the backing of his mentors and all of the great power that came with his connections to CITIC. That all fell apart. But what he did manage to do was to get his wife and his son out here to Canada, where they are safe to this day.
It's not like he was safe back here and then he got on a plane. He might have been there consistently throughout.
Yep.
Ian, thank you so much for telling me the story.
No problem, Jesse. Thanks for talking to me.
That is your Canada Land. If you like this show, please hire us to make it for you and make it better. Click the link in the show notes or go to canadaland.com/join. It takes just a couple of minutes and we give you ad-free podcasts and other stuff. Email me about it at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. We're on Twitter at CanadaLand. Our website is canadaland.com. Last week's episode of Commons about the OCA crisis, I thought I knew about that story. It is a fucking movie. Go listen to that episode. It's incredible. New episode of our politics show, The Backbench, comes out this week. Check that out too. This episode is produced by Tristan Capicchione. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like this show, please support it.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.